When you send me packing down in Green River Valley, I knew that if you couldn't, then no one would have me. Lost myself drinking with those stray dogs in the alleys till the whiskey sold my bones.
Hey, this is Adam with Mile High Stash, the podcast that asks what five albums you would take to a remote Colorado cabin in the event of a zombie apocalypse, armed with only food, water, and a crank-powered Victrola. I just got back from seeing friends in San Francisco and Oakland and also way up in Sonoma County, and it was really fun times, but now it's really summer in Colorado, which means it's hot, except when I bike way up in the mountains. And also there's a lot of live music going on, and summer concert season is here. I just played a gig with Rolling Harvest up in Nederland with Bonnie and Taylor Sims sitting in with us. And the Thursday night Bohemian Nights series in Fort Collins is rolling now too. And our guest today is the amazing Greta Cornett, who everybody around here knows. She is the extraordinary force behind Bohemian Nights and the Bohemian Foundation, Foco MX, Foco MA, and so much more. She's also a longtime trumpet player for 12 Cents for Marvin. I hope you enjoy my forthcoming chat with Greta. Such a powerhouse for music in Northern Colorado. And I hope you drop a review of Mile High Stash on Apple Podcasts if you can, or reach out to me via milehighstash.com where you can donate to keep this thing going, or just say hello. Speaking of saying hello, I'll be drumming with Rolling Harvest Thursday, June 6th at New Terrain in Golden, and also with the Hunter Stone Band at the Bacon and Bourbon Fest in Keystone, Saturday, June 22nd. All right, here's my chat with Northern Colorado music powerhouse, Greta Cornett. Greta Cornett, did you start playing the horn because of your last name? Was that...
No. So I actually, I grew up in Kentucky. And yeah. So, I was in Kentucky till I started high school. But back there were Cornets. So I had no idea that my last name was also Cornett.
Oh, they just said Cornet.
They just called it Cornet. Hornet. Yeah. And when we, in fifth grade... You know, the marching band came to the middle school and talked to everybody about, you know, playing an instrument. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I love music. And I'd been playing piano for a while. So, the only one I could think of was a trumpet. So I was like, I guess I'll do the trumpet or try it. And here we are.
So what age were you when you started playing trumpet?
I was in fifth grade.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, it's been really fun. I grew up in a really tiny town. So when I was in fifth grade, they put me in the high school marching band, pretty much within a few months of playing.
Yeah.
And so.
You must have been in high school around the time of the ska resurrection.
The ska resurrection happening around, when I was in high school. So it was fun.
Were those the first bands you were in, ska bands?
Well, no, I mean, if you think of outside of school bands, I guess.
Yeah,
probably. I didn't actually start playing in outside of school bands until college when I was up at CSU.
So how did you end up at CSU?
It's kind of a weird story, I guess. In high school, I think that a lot of horn players might feel this way because I've talked to a few about it, but you feel like it's kind of limited, how long you'll get to play the horn, because... Yeah. You're like, oh, I guess I'll play through middle school, or I guess I'll play through high school, because what else am I going to do with the horn after then? And then when I was in high school, I actually got recruited to play in college, and I got a scholarship, which I didn't realize that those things happened. And so I spent my first couple of years at Adams State down in Alamosa.
Right.
And while I was in Alamosa, our wind symphony, I guess, we got invited to play at CMEA, which is like a big Colorado music educators thing in Colorado Springs. And so we went up to play, and the band director at CSU had approached me and had talked to me a little bit before then too, and was just like, hey, would you be interested in transferring to CSU? We have scholarships available, and I think you'd be a great addition to the bands. And anyway, we talked at CMEA, and then they sent me some paperwork, and then I was like, I guess I'll transfer. And then there I ended up.
Wow. And then
At CSU, I was like, oh gosh, I love Fort Collins. And then I never left.
Well, who wouldn't love Fort Collins? And then how did music just become your life? I mean, you got, obviously you can't see on a podcast, but you got a guitar pick earrings on. I mean, it's all, music all the
These
time.
These are gifts from the swashbuckling doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mackenzie made them for me.
They're so fucking weird. They're great.
They have donuts on one side and swash ducks on one side.
They are the weirdest, best band that's going. They remind me of like the Aquabats.
Yeah.
You know,
I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes they actually wear their like capes and stuff. Like,
yeah, there you go.
Their doctor coats or whatever they call those things, lab coats.
So how you end up at CSU and you're playing the trumpet, and I'm guessing, you know, you're doing marching band for the football team, right?
Correct. So this is also something people might not think about, but when you're doing marching band on a college level, it is so hard to have like a day job or any kind of a job, because, you know, you practice like 3 to 5 times a week for a couple hours, because every week, at least at CSU at the time, we had a different like field show every single time there was a game.
Yeah.
And we would have to show up on game day like a few hours early and practice the field show before we played the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just a lot that went into it. And then like you would go around and do different things. I was also at CSU when like the football program was like incredible. Like we had Kevin McDougal and Sonny Lubick. So they won like the Holiday Bowl. So I spent Christmas in California.
Wow.
And then the Memphis, like we went to Memphis for the Liberty Bowl and they won that too. And yeah.
Well, that's a blast.
Yeah, it was fun.
Wow. And then you said you started to play in, you know, like rock bands as well.
Yeah, I started branching out more. Like my senior year of high school, I started playing in jazz band, and I loved it. Like I love the improv aspect of it, I guess. Like it's like, oh, great, I can just make stuff up. And that kind of laid the foundation, I guess, for like writing horn lines, which I just didn't realize it at the time. So yeah, I started playing in a few different like bands in college. One of them is... Well, we did. I actually, a lot of people may not realize this. I didn't start playing in 12th Century Marvin until after college.
Yeah.
But our horn section, like, we've been playing together just as long as the band has been together, because we started playing together at CSU. And then we played in a few, like, local bands at the time as well. And then I went to grad school at University of Hawaii. And then when I came back, because I loved Fort Collins, I came back after I finished. That's when I started playing in 12th Century Marvin. And it was our same horn section that I had been playing with since college. And I mean, we were all at CSU anyway. So I'd played in jazz band with Hillary and Sean and everybody that was in the project. So yeah, it was kind of fun the way that that worked out. And yeah.
What did you study in grad school?
Psychology. So in undergrad, I thought I wanted to do psychology, and then that's what my major was going to be. And then when I got my trumpet scholarship, I had to be a music major. So I picked performance because I wasn't entirely sure if I would be a great teacher or not. I was like, because at the time there was really only like music education or music performance. So I did performance. And then when I got ready to graduate from college, I was like, oh my gosh, I have picked the two most worthless like degrees. Like, what am I going to do with these? Like trumpet performance and psychology. So I got into grad school cause I didn't really know what else I was going to do. Yeah. And then, I did cognitive psych and
And what did you do when you got back to the fort?
Well, I was trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I started, I was a preschool teacher for a while.
Oh, wow.
And I loved it. And then, during the time I was doing preschool teaching, that's when 12 Cents kind of like super started ramping up. And that was like in the early aughts.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what all was I doing around that time. You know, I was like super focused on the band's path because we were touring and we were playing a lot of shows. And so I was a teacher by day and a musician at night.
Yeah.
And I remember that's about the time I started like looking around more at what was happening in the local music scene.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I really was kind of just focused on my own band for a really long time. I was just like, oh, like, what are we doing? And then there was a time period in Fort Collins, which, how long have you been here, by the way?
I moved to Boulder from San Francisco in 2008. And that was one of the periods. I've had like these three or four periods of my life where I'm like, I'm done with music. I'm not going to play drums anymore. And so I didn't start playing in Fort Collins until like 2014. And then once I joined the Gas Pops, it was like, we played there all the time.
Oh yeah.
And just completely fell in love with it. But what was the music scene like in the early 2000s?
Well, I didn't really know, to be completely honest, for a while, like what the music scene was about. And then, there was like, I was going to ask because there was a time period, I feel like a lot of people that were around that time remember very distinctly, but we lost like all of our major venues or a lot of our major venues within about a week span, like Mishawaka closed down, Starlight closed down, Connor O'Neill's, which used to be Linden's, it closed down. And so a lot of the local bands, their shows just got bumped completely because, you know, like, I remember in particular, we were friends with Peace Officer at the time because 12 Cents and Peace Officer would play music together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had like an album release scheduled for the Aggie and it got bumped for like a show that they grabbed from Mishawaka or something because it totally makes sense from a business perspective, you know, like pulling in the national acts.
Yeah.
But that was when I first started thinking about the impact of local music and what that meant exactly. Yeah, and then we had some friends from college that were in the CSU Biking Club back then.
Mm-hmm.
And they had us play like some house parties and they'd been trying to open up a bike shop. And anyway, my parents were both celebrating like milestones. And so I went to Road 34 when they very first opened their bike shop and I was going to buy bikes for my parents for their milestone. And when I got there, they had just opened the bike shop part and then they were finishing up the bike bar. And so I was like, oh, look, you have a stage. Like, should totally put some local music on there because everybody's lost their shows. And they're like, hold on, Greta. First off, that's not a stage. That's where bikes can come in and do tricks and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's going to be rad. And, but yeah, if you want to put music there, go ahead. Just do it. And I was like, okay. And that was when I first started doing stuff outside of our own band. And yeah, back in those days.
Do you ever feel like the kind of person, I mean, I'm this way on a smaller level, but like you have ideas and then, you know, you start getting stuff done and then you're known as the person. I mean, you obviously just get so much done and you hold so much. And is it almost scary to say your ideas out loud? Because then you're like, oh shit, now I have to do it. Now I have to do this.
Yeah, I think it's fun. Like sometimes I try to make intentions for reals because then I know if I say it, then I will most likely do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
all right, I'm gonna do this. So
yeah.
Yeah.
When did the Fort Collins Music Association form?
So it kind of came organically out of all those early Road 34 days because I was doing the Road 34 booking and then around like maybe like a couple years later, Hody's came in where the Starlight used to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And so one of the guys that ended up being a partner for that came to Road 34 to ask who was booking the music there. And they were like, oh, it's Greta. And he was like, I know this is a weird question, but would you mind if I got their contact and would it be okay if we shared this person, if they were interested and they could help at both places? And they were like, oh my gosh, yeah, totally. So for a while I started doing both spots. In between doing both of them, I got to know, I knew so many people in the music scene just from doing the Road 34 because we primarily focused on local bands because that's what we knew.
Yeah.
We didn't have those connections because it was like really like, I know it sounds crazy, like a wild, wild west situation. It's like, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to go for it and see what happens. And It was really forgiving back then, you know, like it was like, oh gosh, that was not a great idea. I'm never going to do that again.
Right, or right.
A lot of lessons learned. And yeah. But through that, just got to meet a ton of musicians. And then we would, especially at Road 34, because that was primarily all we booked was local music.
Mm-hmm.
We would start like hanging out and getting to know each other. And I was like, oh, what can we all do together to make the scene better? Because it has such highs and lows, like
right.
in Fort Collins in particular. And I mean, it's got a rich history of music. I mean, we've got the Blasting Room up there, and mm-hmm. we've got so many cool things happening and so many amazing musicians in town. And but we're also a college town, so a lot mm-hmm. of people and bands will form and then they'll leave.
Yeah.
And also back in those days too, it felt like a lot of people would be like, oh, if I'm going to make it in music, I've got to be in, you know, LA or in Nashville yeah. or wherever I need yeah. to be, not Fort Collins. And so that was like some of the things we were trying to change, those mindsets and stuff. And like, how can we make this a place where you can live here and be able to be a working musician? And yeah. that was like the early foundations of Folkola May.
Yeah. And there's so much to it. I mean, even what you were saying about putting on a show in a bike shop, it's like, that sounds fun and okay, let's do it. But then you got to think about, you know, what do you charge for admission? Who's mm-hmm. going to run sound? Is there a liquor license? All of these things. And you're the kind of person, it seems like, who can make sure that everything is taken care of logistically. But then also saying, you know, I want to start a nonprofit. I mean, that's like...
We didn't know it was going to be a nonprofit back
yeah.
then. We were just a bunch of friends hanging out that love yeah. local music. And most yeah. of us were musicians, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll also say, like, all the stuff at Road 34 was very much, like, trial and error. Again, like,
yeah.
you know, we didn't realize until the first show, we're like, oh, my gosh. And I bet anybody that played back in those days remembers, like, oh, it's like... a metal ceiling and the whole front is glass and there's a garage door mm. and it was the acoustics. We didn't even think about that at all.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my gosh. And then again, it comes into play. That wasn't necessarily a stage. And mm-hmm. so I don't know if you remember the epilogues, but they played this epic yeah. show and they completely broke the stage.
Oh,
and we're
God.
Like, oh my gosh. So we had to rebuild the stage, and I'm not much of a carpenter, but I got in and, you know, helped and put
yeah.
the carpet down and, yeah, got up in the ceiling and put baffles in and things I never imagined I'd be doing. But, you know, you learn, I don't know, you just learn those lessons
yeah.
and you're like, okay, this is what we can do with the resources we have. And
yeah.
yeah.
Do you remember sitting down and deciding kind of the mission statement of Folkola May and like what you were going to offer to local artists?
Kind of. And again, you know, we were not planning on necessarily being a nonprofit. We
right.
were just sitting around talking about what we could do. And the first Folkola May, we weren't a nonprofit. We didn't have our nonprofit
yeah.
status. And then we realized all the work we were doing, because we're all volunteering
yeah.
at it. And
I mean, like a collective
yeah.
is probably a better term.
Yeah. Like we were just like, you know, it was very much word of mouth. We're like, hey, we're meeting on Sunday, and we
mm-hmm.
would do things at either Road 34 or at Hody's, because I was still doing
yeah.
that back then. And
right.
We would have like, I don't know, just like really informal meetings where we would
mm-hmm.
just kind of meet up and be like, all right, like, what can we do together? What does the scene need? What do we need as
yeah.
musicians? Or how can we make Fort Collins a better place for musicians to live? Or like, what can we do, you know, together to change, like, the infrastructure? Because that's when pay-to-play was starting. Like, big-time entertainment was
yeah.
trying to come into Fort Collins. And we're like, how do we, like, educate the younger bands? And how do we, you know,
yeah.
just a lot of things like that. And we used to do, like, little showcases just to try to get people to come.
Mm-hmm.
And see what we were doing. And also give some of those bands a chance to play.
Yeah.
And
then... what year was the first Folkola MX? Like 2006 or something like
that?
It
was 2009.
2009?
Yeah.
Was it
year 16.
How many venues did you have the first year?
We had 12. And it wasn't...
Wow, even
we
that's
weren't planning
a lot.
To do that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, the first year, we... So, I don't know if you know the origination of Folkola MX.
No, I want to hear it.
Sure, I'll tell you all about it. You know, we used to do all these meetings, you know, as the backbones, I guess, of what was going to be Folkola May and the Fort Collins Musicians
yeah.
Association. And one of the first things we decided to do was have a peer awards. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you exactly why we did it. So back in those days, like I remember, because I was doing 12 Cents for Marvin, mm-hmm. and we were so fortunate. We were able to get into places like Denver and Boulder. And a lot of Fort Collins bands didn't have those opportunities. They would just kind of be trapped in Fort Collins without ways to get down there. And I remember, you know, like 12 Cents had played at one of the Westward Music Showcases. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we're on the ballot. And I'm guessing a lot of that has to do with we're a ska band and there's not a lot of ska in Colorado. Yeah. So maybe we were the token ska band or whatever, you know, but we were there and we were one of the only Fort Collins bands that were ever there. And so I remember talking to Dave Herrera, who was there. Dave, if you're listening.
Used to be my editor a long time ago.
Love Dave. He was, such an inspiration to all the work we do. But this one in particular, he inspired because I remember talking to him and I was like, why don't you have more Fort Collins bands playing or like on the ballot? And like he said, you all don't really have a scene. And that like completely just crushed me and broke my heart. And not because what he said in my mind wasn't true, but because he's somebody that advocates so much for local music and he doesn't realize what all's happening in Fort Collins. So we're like, well, how do we get people? I mean, if the people that care so much about local music don't understand what's happening up here, how do we get anybody to just pay attention to all the cool things happening? So we're like, well, maybe we'll do our own like showcase, and instead of making it like a popularity contest where everybody's just having their friends vote, we'll do a peer awards where we recognize each other. And that's kind of what started. So we started compiling a list of everyone that we knew that played in every genre, and we didn't like limit it the first year. So, you know, like especially indie rock in Fort Collins, there's probably 40 bands nominated. But the really cool thing that happened from it that we didn't expect was when we were all gathered, because we had the awards at the Aggie, a lot of musicians were like, I had no idea that there's so many like noise bands in Colorado or in Fort Collins, and I wish I had a chance to see them before I voted, because I just want to see like what some of this stuff sounds like. So we're like, well, next year before we do the peer awards, we should do a showcase, and maybe it is something like the Westward Music Showcase, where we have, I don't know, like we pick four venues and we put like four bands at each venue. And we just do that like the weekend before the peer awards. So we're like, yes, next year, that's what we'll do. And so we started planning out like what that was going to look like. And as soon as we started talking to people about it, like there was so much support from the musicians and then also the community that it quickly spiraled into 100 and I think we had 120-ish bands and artists, and then 12 venues the first year.
And this year, you said was the 16th?
This year was 16.
How many venues and bands this year?
We have found our sweet spot, I feel like, and that's about 40 venues in Fort Collins and about 400-ish bands and artists.
And this stuff just, like, it doesn't happen in other cities that way. You know, like, there is South by Southwest, and I get the feeling that Foco MX is what South by Southwest used to be in a way. And it's just, for anyone who hasn't been there, it's everywhere in town has bands, and it's 3 days, and it's like every genre you could think of, and it's all local bands, you know. And whereas South by Southwest, suddenly, you know, maybe 10 years ago, it was like, well, there's local bands and there's independent small touring bands, but then like Metallica will be playing or Lady Gaga. So it's wonderful how you guys keep it for the local community, you know, and I hope you keep it that way too.
Yeah, that's very intentional. Like that's something that is part of our mission. And it's also something that's evolved, like those first couple years, and you may remember just being a local musician in the scene, and some people still remember it, but those first few years we were like, oh, you have to be a Fort Collins group or Northern Colorado group to play the festival, because, and it wasn't because we were trying to gatekeep or anything. It was mostly because back in those days, we were just trying to show people that, hey, Fort Collins does have a music scene. Look, we have 112 amazing bands, and we don't even have all of them. This is just a sampling of every genre and putting them at all places. And so that was, you know, that intention behind that. And it's something we've really tried to carry forward. I think it was about year three, we were like, You know, because there was, we were friends with so many bands in Denver and, you know, booking so many Denver bands, and they were all like, oh, we want to come play too. And, you know, it'll be super fun. And we realized that the best way for us to grow our scene was to share our scene. And that was really what we always wanted to do. So started trying to book at Folkolomics some of these Denver and Boulder bands with our Fort Collins bands that we thought would make really great buddies or great shows that if in the future they wanted to play together again or something, or like similar personalities or similar genres or whatever that looked like. So we were trying to do that as well in there.
I remember my first Foco MX. I was playing with Gas Pops. We were on a bill with Eldrin and Von Stomper at Hody's. Von Stomper's not around anymore. I think Eldrin maybe gets together once in a while.
I feel like, but all of those musicians are still around. Like,
Exactly.
Von Stomper ended up being like Woodbelly, and now what, Chuckwagon and Frontliners and
Pappy Longlegs.
Oh yeah, Pappy, so many. And that's the really cool thing about our local music scene. Like, watching how all these bands, like where they go, and where they evolve to, And yeah, same thing, like with Eldrin. Like, I just saw his Cali play last weekend.
Yeah, yeah,
saw Josh Lee. And every time I see him, I'm like, oh, I love Eldrin.
Yeah. Well, the drummer for Eldrin that night was Forrest Raup, who he might have been like 19 or something back then. And I was just in awe. I'm still in awe of him. And he's a friend of mine. But I didn't really know what to expect, you know, because I had been in the Denver scene and the Boulder scene with the Yoppers. And we showed up, I mean, the way that Clay is, it's like we showed up right before our set. That's basically what Clay is like, always trying to just make everything right on time. And, you know, we load in through the back in the alley, and our set was maybe at 9 and Eldrin was at 8. And, we get on stage and just, it's so tangible, so like palpable, the way that Fort Collins supports local music. I mean, like, we got out there and the whole place was packed and they're just hanging on every note. And I'm sure that it was that way at every venue in town at the exact same time. And it's so special that it's only local bands, because then it's not like they're waiting around to see some band that, like, everybody knows because they had seen on MTV or something like that, you know, and that's such a special thing. And we can get to more of that, but I want to ask you your 5 albums that you would take in the event of a zombie apocalypse. If you were stranded in a remote Colorado cabin, armed only with food, water, and a crank-powered Victrola. And you had said that you brought 2 lists.
I did.
So let's do the 5, since we're on that subject. You said you had a list of 5 local albums.
Oh, yeah, you want my local
one? Yeah, let's do the local one first.
All right, so when I built my list for you, I was trying to be also super intentional with those two. And so, and I think I shared earlier, some of my very favorite artists never change. Like, they've been the same as long as I can remember loving music. But like with local music in particular, I feel like I'm constantly finding new favorite bands. So I tried to use a little bit of criteria where it was really meaningful for whatever reason it was that this might be an album that I still cling to or a new one that I found. I will share them with you.
Yeah.
And I sent myself a text, so I've got to pull it up. I could remember easily, but I just want to make sure I get it all correct.
Yeah.
So I'm going to share my first one, and it has a story behind it, which I'll share before I tell you the album, because you might actually know the people I'm talking about before I tell you. So one of those Westward Music Showcases that we played as 12 Sons for Marvin, and I honestly cannot remember. I tried to remember what venue we were at, and it was, you know, like a bar, so who knows what it was. But I do remember, you know, like showing up and sound checking and stuff. And then after we sound checked, I went to the bar to get like a water or whatever. And when I went up, there was like this incredibly kind person sitting there that was just like talking about, oh yeah, like we're in the band after you, but I wanted to make sure I showed up, and because I've heard about this band before and whatever. And just so nice and everything. And you know, you meet people sometimes and they're like, oh yeah, I'll totally come to your show. And then they never do. Or you'll meet people that are like, oh, I'm going to stick around and watch you. Then they don't. And that's all you know, it's what it is and it's part of it. But I remember looking out and this person actually stayed the whole time and looked super engaged. And I was like, oh gosh, that's really cool. Like another local musician. And, you know, we got off stage, super complimentary and stuff. And so, honestly, I think I had planned to go somewhere else and get food or something. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I'm going to stick around and watch them play. So I did. And it was an incredible set. And it was like one of those times where I was just starting to get turned on to local music. But I feel like they kind of cemented the deal, at least in my mind. Like, they played this one song in particular. It was called In Debt to the Heart. And when they played it, like, I teared up. And I don't know that I had ever done that before with local music. And I don't know if it's because I didn't give it a chance or if I just didn't pay attention. But I was definitely paying attention because they were kind of a listening type band. And anyway, so the band ended up being Born in the Flood. And the person I talked to was Joseph Pope III.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were just so cool. But so I put that album as one of them. The one, gosh, If This Thing Should Spill. Do you remember that album from back in the day? Oh, you got to check it out.
I will.
I'm going to send you a link to that song.
Yeah.
Well,
we do a thing on the show where one song from each album choice goes on like a Spotify playlist for Mile High Stash. So I'll make sure to put, I'll check out the whole record, but then I'll put one of the songs on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's one. Do you want some more?
Yeah, let's do all five of these.
Do you want a story with each one, or should I just tell you each one? They're all very
You can do whatever you want. I'm just loving talking to you.
Okay, well, that sounds great. All right. And I won't lie. I actually made 10 albums of local bands.
Yeah.
As I was driving here, I was like, I really, if I'm going to be fair, I should pare it down to five.
Yeah.
So the second one I'm going to tell you, it's The Sickly Hex, and it's Go to Heck. And so I found out about The Sickly Hex through Folklomex when they submitted.
Yeah.
And they put this album out. I mean, I'm guessing it was like a 2018-ish album.
Uh-huh.
But
What kind of music is it?
It sounds just like a garage. Like, I love it. Like, it's super raw. Super,
nice.
Like, they put out some more polished albums since then, but this is like my go-to. So I still listen to this album in its entirety, like, all the time.
Wow.
And I'll send you some of the songs to check out. I think you'll really like them. But And they also, like, back in those days, they used to run, like, a house party up in Fort Collins called the Heck House. And I've always felt like this band in particular, some of the members have really been into, like, advocating for safe spaces. So I feel like they're leaders in that community as well. And, like, I don't know. I love their songwriting. So, and they used to make these really cool videos to go with these songs on the album that would come out. And, very DIY.
Do you know about this Blast and Scrap thing?
I do,
That's cool. You just remind me of that.
Yeah, they're also, super huge advocates for local music. And, I love everything that they're doing, too.
Yeah. All right, number three, local album.
Okay. Number three. So this one is kind of a tie, but it's kind of, I'm going to go ahead and say Fierce Bad Rabbit, Spool of Thread.
Oh, everybody knows Fierce Bad Rabbit.
And so cool. I picked this one in particular because... So most people probably know, but I'm married to the bass player from Fierce Bad Rabbit. He's Dayton. And so anyway, when they were recording this album or when they were writing this album, I guess, it was kind of like when we started dating.
Uh-huh.
So like I think on it very fondly, like all these songs. And then we got to, they invited our horn section. They recorded this one at the Blasting Room and they invited us to come in and play with them on some of the songs. So that was really fun. And they also did some of the songs. Very randomly, they demoed them at John Magney's basement. And at the time, I was in John playing with a band with John called the Three Twins. And so he called that studio Knucklehead Studio. And anyway, it's kind of fun. Memories.
Yeah.
All right. The next band I'm going to tell you is a newer band. And I have had this album on repeat. But it's Electric Animals. And it's called A Bear and the Bull. And I'm not sure if you've heard this album yet.
This is going to be an education for me. Okay. This is great.
Well, this is when I found it this year's Folklomex. They were like one of my favorite like submissions, period. And I like when they submitted, they had a song called Come Clean that was like constantly on repeat for me. And it sounded very like influenced by Nine Inch Nails. And I was like, I can get with that or whatever. Like, this is a great song. Like, and then they put this other one out called Feel Something. And it definitely had a completely different vibe than that one. And I was like, oh, like, I love this one. And then they put a video for it. So this is a newer one. And it's also incredible. But then they put out this album, and they changed the name of the song, which I get sometimes artists do that. So now it has, like, I Want to Love You, I think is the name of the song now. But they still have both of the songs on Spotify. But this album feels like if you had, like, 80s pop meets, like, a British band. Like, it's really good. Like, an 80s synth band and a British pop.
You're such a music geek. It's awesome. Oh. It's the best. It's amazing.
But yeah, so yeah. I really like them a lot. Okay, and
fifth and final local album.
So that, see, this is where it gets really hard because I love all these other ones. So do you want a newer one or an older one?
I want the one that, like, you know, has the most power for you right now.
Well, if it's the most for right now, Horse Bitch. Like, I love a lot of their albums, but I really like It's Rest in Peace, Pistachio.
This is another band I haven't heard.
Oh, you're going to love them too.
This is Fort Collins, you know.
Well, these are Colorado, but they all have, well, most of these are actually Fort Collins. Yeah, that's so.
How long does it take you to go through the submissions every year, and like how many people are doing that?
So we've had the same booking committee, and we've added a couple people since like year five. So I'll just share who the booking committee is, because I think all of them are amazing, and they're all volunteering to be part of this. So we put in countless hours listening to the submissions, and this year we had about 2,500 submissions for Folk Colomex, and we only have like 400-ish spots. So even though 400 sounds like a lot of bands or artists, once you start like dissecting it, you know, like we hear from a lot of people, why didn't I get in? And it's like, not because it wasn't a great submission, but like sometimes there's like 400 or 500 bluegrass submissions, and we can't take all 400 or 500 of them, especially when we're trying to build like a music showcase that has every part of the music scene in it. So on our committee, it's myself and then Liz Barnes, who a lot of you might know because she's amazing. Scoo Leary, who owns the Aggie building. He's still in the Aggie Theater, but he's been a part of our scene for a long time. Mike McTiernan, who a lot of people know under his DJ name, which is Two Scoops. Peggy Lyle, who we just hired as our executive director at Folk OMA. And Caitlin McQueen, who has been project managing the festival for the last couple of years.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's our booking committee. So we start listening to submissions like in the fall, and because they open up around November. Mm-hmm. And when they start opening up, we start looking at them because there's always like a ton that come in right away. You can sort them on the backside because we custom built our website, because the reality is their first couple years of Folk Colomex, I used to just do everything out of my head, which sounds crazy, but it's just the truth. And then like once it got to a certain point, I started putting them on whiteboards, and I used to have them like around my house, like these big whiteboards, and each whiteboard would be a venue. And that's how we used to book the festival.
Wow.
And then year five, I had Maddie, she is now 11. But that was the year we were like, oh my God, what happens if I go away? Cause everything is in my head or on a whiteboard. So that was the year we kind of digitized it with website and stuff, and like trying to get it. Well, not really a website. That year we put it into Google spreadsheets, and we started looking at a website. And what we found was we used programs like sketch.org and stuff, and they're made for more national festivals or national artists. And so we would put people in like The Holler, and it came up as the Spice Girls, like things like that. And we were like, we can't run a music festival that's centered around Colorado artists like this. And so we started looking into how we would have to custom make it. And so on the backside, you can sort it by a lot of different ways. You can look at if it's the first year they've played or first year they've applied or if they've ever played before, so that we can kind of make sure we're getting a lot of new artists in, a lot of artist discovery. If you have people that are under 21 in the band, it filters that way too, so that we're not putting you at a 21 and up venue. And if you are sharing members, and if you filled out your application with everybody in the project, like if we've stuck you in a spot where your shared members are playing in a different spot, it'll turn them red so that we know that we can't put that band or those two bands up against each other.
Wow.
Yeah. So super complicated, but really fun.
Well, you thought of everything, it sounds like.
Well, again, it goes back to the trial and error.
Yeah.
Lessons learned.
It's really nice how you build, you know, speaking from experience, submitting to a lot of festivals, it's great how with Folk OMX, you're not only building your own submission in a way that, you know, that makes it easy for you guys to vet, you know, as well as then later organize, you know, but also it's not only a submission platform, but once you've been accepted, then, you know, the artist has the chance and hopefully they all do, you know, to add like their stage plot and add a photo and add links and stuff like that. And it's intuitive. It's really cool.
Thank you.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. The really cool thing is everything that you submit when we flip it live on the website, because we put it in, like it goes into time slot, venue, and your artist name, exactly how you submit. It flips it live. Your submission turns into the front side of the website for your artist page.
Yeah.
Which is super cool. So like one of our goals for before next year's submissions, because essentially it's an EPK and like a beautifully wrapped one for us, is how do we gift that to musicians so that they can have that for other things? And so that's kind of one of the things we're looking to do this year.
And I wanted to ask you, if somebody, like if you met somebody at a party and you never met, and they said to you, oh, your name's Greta, but what do you do? What would you say?
I a lot of people ask, and I usually say I'm a musician and I work in the music industry.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's I mean, it's accurate. It just seems,
it seems like a toenail in the water, like not even a toe. It's like, gosh.
I know. It's so crazy. And then they're like, what kind of music do you play? I'm like, oh, I'm just playing some local bands.
You, correct me if I'm wrong, but you stepped down as the executive director.
So we never had an executive director, for the longest time. It was just all of us like volunteering and we still have a lot of our core, like original, like founding board members. There's four of us that have stuck around all these years. Yeah. And ultimately this is the way I think about it. When we were back in those days of not realizing we were putting together a nonprofit, I was the most organized of the musicians that were meeting. Cause you know, I would show up with my notebook and take notes and stuff. Yeah. And so that was kind of how I ended up in the role I ended up in it. And also I really care about it. It's something I absolutely believe in. And so by default, when we did realize we were going to be a nonprofit, cause after the first vocal MX, we're like, because we used our own money to hand make tickets and buy all the materials. And then, you know, and we were able to pay the artists and we took 20%, which we still use the same model. We take a little bit so that next year we can do it again. Because the first year we were like, well, I don't know if this will happen again or not. And we're like, oh, it is going to happen. But kind of by default, I ended up when we were filling out our nonprofit stuff, you needed like officers. So you needed like a president and a vice president. And we were all just like, well, I mean, you should be the president. Great. Oh, you're super good with numbers. You should be the treasurer. And that was just kind of how that happened. And then, I've just stayed really involved because, again, it is something I really care about. And because my day job is in the music industry as well, like it looks a lot different than like Kevin, who was our vice president. He works at CSU's like atmospheric science, you know, department. He's building all these programs for NASA. So it's really hard for him to stay connected to the local music when he's doing stuff like that.
So what do you designate as your day job?
So I work for the Bohemian Foundation.
Right.
And I'm on our live music team. So I'm at Washington's in the Armory and then Bohemian Nights. And Bohemian Nights are like our outdoor and our free events.
Yeah. And then New West Fest is...
Correct. Yeah, that was something that went away during COVID.
Yeah.
But we've, you know, we've built out Thursday Night Live, which is like a summer concert series we do every Thursday. Yes, it's amazing. But we used to only do like X amount, like a very limited number, because we would end it like a week before New West Fest.
Yeah.
But now we program it into September, so it goes longer.
Yeah.
And then we also, this was our third year, but we just had Global Sounds, which is celebrating like music from around the world.
Wow.
And we do that downtown. And it's just a really cool event as well. And it's also free, all ages, open to everyone. And
what is the state of the music district? What's going on with that?
Oh, the music district. So I love the music district. I think they're a really like cool resource in Fort Collins. They're like like 6-building or 8-building campus dedicated to like not only like live music, but like to the business of music. Because a lot of people, I feel like when they get into the music industry, you know, people are like, oh, how are you going to make a living doing that? Or what's going to be your day job? And it's like, that shouldn't be the question you get, you know, like you should just be able to make a living playing music because it is a job. And so like this is a place where you can go and you can get your membership and you can learn how to be a self-sustaining musician and a career in music, which, you know, could look like whatever you want it to look like. Maybe it's recording or maybe it's touring or maybe it's sync licensing or, you know, like there's so many different areas you can get into and those are all possibilities. And the reality is like there are going to be these like hotspots of music or there's going to be these incredible musicians, but why isn't it Fort Collins? Why isn't it Northern Colorado? It can be because obviously we have so many incredible musicians that call Colorado home that are moving to Colorado because there's so much support for the arts here and for music in particular. And so I don't know, like I feel like there's no reason you can't be like a full-time working musician.
Yeah. I had the opposite question for you, which is why Fort Collins? Like why is Fort Collins the place, you know, like I've played everywhere in the United States basically, and I don't know that there's anywhere else that has like, you know, something like Foco MA and something like the Music District and something like Foco MX. So why? Like, how did it happen there?
I think all of it is really organic and it really comes down to, you know, like our community in general really supports local.
Yeah.
Like be whatever local it is. Like if you go into Old Town, like we have one of the like most thriving like squares in the country. Like people come from everywhere to see how is this happening? You know, like why is your downtown so revitalized? And there's a lot of other cities that want to come and model after it, which is completely reasonable. And it makes sense. But the reality is like people intentionally support local. Like, yes, I could order this book off Amazon or I could just go to Firehouse Alley and buy it for the same price. Like, why wouldn't I just do that? Or like we have a chocolate shop where they hand make their chocolate and it's delicious and it costs, you know, maybe a little bit more than a Hershey bar. But if I'm going to buy a chocolate, I want to buy a good chocolate and I want to make sure, you know, I'm buying from somebody that, you know, it's going, those dollars are staying in my community and having an impact in my community. And I think a lot of people think about that the same way, and especially with music, but it is also something that didn't just happen overnight. Like, you know, we go back to talking about Road 34 days. We used to do $2 cover to come see three bands and like people didn't want to pay it. And we're like, oh my gosh, please tell me you're joking. Like all the beers in here are like a dollar, like, and you're not going to pay $2 to the band, but you're going to come in and drink $20 bar tab. Like, you know, like, and it's just about like persistence and education and just making sure people understand what is going on and why it matters. And, you know, I think that's something Fort Collins does really well. Like, you know, I think about a story one of my friends would talk about. They'd be like, you know, like, of course we want to know who our local farmer is and where like our meats or our vegetables are being grown and stuff. But like, why wouldn't you want to know like your local bass player? Why wouldn't you want to know your local drummer? Like, it's the same thing. Like, you know, and I think that is something people have started really paying attention to. And even with Focal MX, like the first, what, like 7 or 8 years, our tickets were like $15 in advance and $20 weekend of, you know, like, and we always intentionally kept them low because we didn't want to separate out the days because we wanted people to have to buy the whole pass so that they would feel like they wanted to get their money's worth and come see all the bands that are playing both days. And it's one of my favorite things, like, you know, to walk around and hear people talking about which bands are going to see or which artists. They're like, oh, I'm excited for this one or this one. And
I really wanted, like, and a bunch of people talked about this year, and I know it's environmentally bad, you know, but to have one of those little schedules you can put in your pocket.
Yeah, we did those pre-COVID, and they are kind of a pain, to be honest. Yeah. Like, they take a lot of bandwidth putting them together because they have the map, and they have, you know, you have to, like, try to figure out how to make them look pretty while having all that information. And then they're outdated even before they get printed.
And then they're all over town, I'm sure. They're all over the sidewalks and just that, you know. So it's not a good thing in that way.
But again, investing in the website, like, I'm not sure if you got a chance to do it. You could build your own schedule and you could share it with other people so you could see what kind of schedule your friends had. And like, like, so it's actually a really cool feature. And then also you can just like see, like, we shifted some things where, like whatever time you were looking at it, that's where it started. So you didn't have to like scroll through Friday if you're like Saturday at nine o'clock. Yeah. So like things like that, like little tweaks. And again, lessons learned. We're like, okay, like we should make this better if we can and make it, you know,
It's also lessons learned from the bands and from the fans and people like me who like I played and I'm a fan and I went to other stuff. It's like, oh, actually I could take advantage of, you know, these other things I have to offer. You know, and it's great that you have the green room that's, you know, the regular green room and then the sober one. And you've thought of everything. It's like,
oh, the musicians. So cool. It's our community. Like, and that's the really cool thing is like we get feedback from musicians that are like, hey, this is like, you know, we try to be like super flexible and like really reactive. So it's like, this is something that really matters to us. And this is something that we should do. And you know, it is a festival for musicians put together by musicians. And so that's something we always try to make it a great experience for our musician. And
And you pay, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, you pay everybody equally.
Correct. Yeah.
So there's not like, well, the headliners get this much money and the band that played at the bookstore down the street gets a different amount of money.
Yeah. And that's something we started year one. And like the reality was like, we were like, oh gosh, we don't have money to give everybody guarantees, but we will make sure if you play, you're going to get paid. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to be super fair. So we're like, okay, great. Like, and we had like the equity model. We're like, okay, great. Like, because how do you, I mean, music is art and, you know, like it's super subjective as well, but we didn't want to make it that way for our local scene. So we're like, okay, we'll take 20% after the expenses, because that's what's best for the musician.
Yeah.
So after expenses, Folk Home will take 20% for like the promoter fee, essentially, which is pretty fair, you know, in the music world. And then all of that money that we take goes back into making sure the festival can happen next year. So after year one, when we had to like hand make our tickets and buy all of the things to make it happen out of our own pockets, year two, we bought Slide Rock wristbands. We're like, we are never doing that again.
Yeah,
we handmade tickets for like a month.
Right. Yeah.
Because we didn't know we were going to sell so many. And then we pay everybody equally. And I think, you know, just in general, like sometimes it's a band's first paycheck ever or an artist's first paycheck they ever get. And it means a lot. And it also, we just want to let people know that they have value and we value local music and we value the work that you're doing. And we may not pay your fair market rate in terms of like, you may be a national headliner that gets this amount, but we can pay you what we can and do our best to make sure that you have a great experience and that hopefully, you know, you get to see a lot of friends and you get to see a lot of your peers and people you may not see a lot, which is one of my favorite parts. Cause back in the early days, you know, I was still touring. And so I would always hear about these like groups I really wanted to see, but I could never see them because I was on the road or I had a show the same night. And so it's like, great, we're all here in town together and hopefully I can see some of the ones I want to see. And I know part of it is still like we might be playing at the same time.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes for me at Foco MX, there are a lot of bands I want to see and then I get stuck in the green room because I'm just like running into all these people that I want to hang out with, you know, that it's hard to get together and go to their shows and then, you know, come to your shows, but then you're all in the exact same place and you're just like hanging out and having an incredible time.
Yeah.
That's honestly the best thing for me about Foco MX is just running into all the other players, you know, and you and like, you know, everybody.
Really fun.
Okay. So give me your five, national.
All right, I'm going to give you my five nationals. And so I also gave myself criteria for these. So I have to be able to listen to the whole album. I don't want to skip any songs.
Yeah.
And I want to be inspired by each one of these albums. And they have to have some kind of meaning for me. So my first one, and I know you probably know this because we've had many conversations. My go-to all-time favorite artist is always David Bowie.
Yeah.
So the hard part was like picking which album. And then I was like, well, I'd really like to pick like the Berlin Sessions, but that's technically cheating because that's three albums and I only want to do one album per artist. So I did go with The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and The Spiders from Mars. And mostly because I love the whole album front to back. And I like probably like a lot of people from my generation, I got introduced to David Bowie through Just Dance or Let's Dance and like that whole album, like the 80s Bowie. But then once, you know, you find the artist, and then you go do a deep dive. Like this was the album that made me absolutely fall in love with this musician. Because again, it's like all the emotions are there. Like you go on the highs and the lows, and it's just like that raw, like, creative spirit that I really just like bond with. Like, it's like, okay, like, this person has to be an artist because there's no other path for them. So
it's like a movie.
Yes.
You know, and even the way 5 years comes in, it's almost like how Dark Side of the Moon starts with like a heartbeat, you know, and it's all, and it's saying, okay, this is a story that's about to be told.
Oh yeah. And even the vocals in 5 years, like, they're just so powerful and like so fierce and just like out there. And it's just like, you know, you feel it.
Have you ever been to London?
No.
I am such a David Bowie nerd that I went to Soho. I was on a bike tour just solo, and I went and I wanted to stand in the doorway that he's standing in on the cover of Ziggy Stardust, because it's still there. And all over London, you know, they have these round plaques for things, and some of them are like, you know, first dentist office, you know, and then some of them are like, you know, Freddie Mercury's childhood home. And then this one is just a doorway in Soho, and it says, you know, this is where the album cover was shot. And I was like, I just want to stand in that doorway.
I just want to touch it, because you probably touched it.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Breathe in this air.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, number two.
Okay, number two is like also like a favorite of mine. Like, this artist in particular, somebody I just love, and I feel like I connect with them on so many levels. But the album I picked is Doolittle by the Pixies.
Nice.
And I love them so much.
Did you see them on the tour where they played that from front to back?
Yes, the one in Denver.
At the Fillmore?
Yeah, where they did two nights, and one night didn't sell out, and it broke my heart.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I was like, oh my gosh, because I couldn't afford tickets, because it was back when I was like a working musician. And then the second night didn't sell out, so they sent out a code for $3 tickets. I was like, oh my God, everybody, we are going to the show.
That's when Kim was still in the band.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also randomly... our band, 12 Cents, we were always good friends with Rob Drapkin, and he got asked to open for Frank Black at like the Walnut Room.
Yeah.
And he knew I love the Pixies, so he texted me and he was like, hey, I need somebody to sell merch. Would you maybe come down and sell merch for me at the show? And I was like, oh my God, yes. And you know, this is, again, I'm a working musician, so I would not have the funds to buy a ticket probably. Yeah. So I went down and I sold merch. And when I got there, Frank Black did not have a merch seller. So he asked, and he was like doing it himself that tour. So he asked if I would sell his merch. And I was like, oh my God, I would be so honored. And then he tried to pay me at the end. And I was like, I can absolutely not take your money. Like, no. So I got a t-shirt instead.
I was going to say, I bet he at least gave you a t-shirt.
Oh yeah. He's like, you can have anything you want. And I was like, I have all your albums already, so I'll just take this t-shirt. Yeah. Okay. So my third one is Miles Davis, and it's Kind of Blue.
Oh,
I'm
nice.
Probably not a surprise, because I'm a trumpet player, and that album.
Is that your favorite trumpet player?
He is my favorite trumpet player.
There's a book that I'm reading right now. It's sitting here, and it just came out a few months ago. It's called Three Shades of Blue. It's by James Kaplan, and it's one of the best books I've ever read about music. It's about like three stories. The life stories of Miles and Coltrane and Bill Evans, and then, you know, how they all intersected to make that album. So you got to read this.
I do. I was like, that's another reason I love this album, because it's like the three of them and Cannonball Adderley. And
Well, and except for one song, it's all first takes.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take a picture of the top of your book so that I can read it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that album, like, I feel like, all the artists that I like truly like connect with, I feel like he has never been afraid to take a chance and like just really puts it all out there. And that's all I can hope to be as a human being, and also as a musician, just live life that way. So,
yeah, I mean, there's this David Bowie quote that's famous where he says, I don't know where I'm going to go next, but I promise it won't be boring. And the only artist that I could ever compare David Bowie to is Miles Davis. And that's for two reasons. And one is that, like, every time that person came out with an album, you were like, who are they going to be now?
Yeah.
And secondly, neither of them were like the best musician. They surrounded themselves with the best musicians. And they also, you know, they had something to say with their instrument. And one just happened to be his voice. But you know, it's not surprising that you're into Miles as well as Bowie.
This is true.
Yeah. Okay, number four.
All right, my number four is Selena. And I love Selena so much, as you might can tell.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know, and I couldn't decide, but I went with Amor Prohibido. And only because, like, I like how there's so many different songs on that album that I just really connect with. And again, my criteria, I can't skip any of them. So
yeah.
I can listen to every one, and I can listen to it front to back. And she is another artist I feel like that is super fierce and fearless.
When did you get into her?
Gosh, not till I was out of high school. I was probably out of college, to be honest. And then I just found her music. I think one of my friends was playing it, and I was like, oh, I love that voice or whatever. Mm. And then, like, once you find something that you really connect with, like, you, at least for me, I do like the deep dive, and then I get into all of it and stuff. Yeah. And once I started going through her catalog, and then I learned her story, I kind of knew it, but not really. Right. And then, yeah.
How old was she when she died? Like 23 or something?
She was very young, yes. And she hadn't even released the English album when she died. She had recorded it, but it hadn't come out. And so.
You probably know the song she did with David Byrne.
Which one?
Oh, it's called God's. God's Child? Yeah. It's a song about a transvestite in New York City walking to school. And I don't think that they like worked together in the studio, but he hired her to sing the choruses. And it's beautiful. Yeah, you got to check that out.
I'm going to check
that out.
That's
really, really good.
Yeah.
I'll have to put that on the My Last Dash playlist too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
What do you think about the movie with Jennifer Lopez?
I love it. Like, I love everything that I can find about her. And I think it's because I didn't live it at the time or experience it.
Mm-hmm.
Like any chance I get to absorb anything that like is part of that, I love it.
Yeah.
So my kids love Selena too. Like we watched, me and my 11-year-old, we watched the miniseries on, or like the seasons that were on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And just really loved it. And then I have a 7-year-old too. Like I have two kids, and my youngest, he used to like, he would get so mad and upset when we would watch like the movie or the show and they're like, why don't they stop it this time? And we're like, I mean, this is like based on true life. So this is what really happened. It's not like normal TV or like, this is like a real story and it is tragic and we all connect with it so much. And that's why it hurts every time it happens.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, maybe when he grows up, he can produce, a television show where people go back in history and change all the bad stuff.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Okay, number five.
Okay, so number five is another artist that I absolutely love. I have probably seen this band live the most out of any bands I've ever seen, besides local ones, which might be a shock to a lot of people. But it's Weezer and it's Pinkerton, and I love that album so much.
Why that album?
I think, again, it's like really unexpected. Like, I love the Blue album too. Like, I can listen to that one as much as possible. But I feel like they really experimented and put themselves out there on Pinkerton. It's not like... I feel like a lot of people think Rivers Cuomo, because he's even said like he has like a formula for how he writes songs and like this is how you write a hit. And I mean, it's proven again and again, like, yes, that's true. But ultimately, he's just a great songwriter and the band is just a great band. And so that album is not necessarily hits. They're just good songs and they have a lot of feeling in them and they're like really raw and powerful and full of emotion. And I think that's why I love it.
I have showed my kid several times. She's 14 now and she's playing bass and guitar and clarinet, but I've shown her Weezer on Conan O'Brien. They're doing the Sweater song in, I don't know what year, 1994 or something. And I'm like, even if you or someone ends up, going to Juilliard or the Berklee School of Music, like, look at the energy that they had and like how much fun they're having and the guitar sounds and all that. Like, this is an education as much as anything you could ever learn in school.
That's true.
How many times have you seen Weezer live?
Well, okay, so this is kind of a trick question.
This is like 30?
It's been a lot, but also I've been at South By where they're playing, and like,
yeah, that counts.
I've seen them like, I don't know, like 10 times at South By.
Yeah, that counts.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I've probably seen them like 20-ish times. I saw them with Pixies when they came to Fiddler's Green.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
And that was actually an excellent show.
So Foco MX is not until April of next year.
Correct.
But you know, this episode is going to come out in June. So what's happening, you know, this summer that you're working on that you're excited about? You know, there are Thursday night shows, but then correct. I'm sure there's a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, like I think, you know, we have a lot of cool things just in Fort Collins in general, even if they're not, you know, related to things I'm directly producing. But, you know, mm-hmm. you mentioned Blast and Scrap earlier, and there's, yeah. they have a ton of programming this like summer and fall, like really cool things and things in the community. You know, Foco MA during COVID, we started a program called In Tune, and it's like part of that is looking at how can we be more in tune with musicians and their needs. Mm-hmm. And not that we're like, you know, these experts in any of the fields, but we are really good at connecting like what needs to be connected. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we connect musicians to a lot of different things through Intune. And one of the programs we started was called Music Industry Nights. And those mm-hmm. are at the Museum of Discovery. And I know we have one coming up, and they've also kind of changed and evolved as we've needed them to, yeah. and based on musicians' needs, like during COVID, like we talked about, like we had a hug tunnel because something we heard from a lot of musicians, they were like super depressed because they're very social people and they needed like to touch other people yeah. and stuff. And so like the Office for Aging in Fort Collins had developed this like hug tunnel where you would put your arms in plastic on each side and you could hug each other. And like wow. it had been the first time like some people had been touched in a while, like at one of those music industry nights. And I don't know, like that's just an example. That's where it started. Yeah. And, you know, it looked some like, how do we address like food insecurity and like housing crisis and stuff like that through this evolution yeah. of it. And now we're looking at, we're doing a series with Jamal Curry, who you might know as Boss Eagle. He's a local musician. But he's doing, one on artificial intelligence and musicians and wow. how to protect your property and stuff, because, you know, you feel like, at least I feel like, you know, we were so far as an industry behind everyone else when it came to digitizing music. And
yeah.
we've never caught up with that. Like people are still not making what they should be making right. for digital music and yeah. how people consume. So why aren't we getting ahead of it now with art, like the artificial intelligence? You know, like we need to be protecting your intellectual rights. And like if people are pulling from that, or if programs are pulling from you, like how do we get ahead of it so that, you know, we're not at the bottom again? Like,
yeah.
Anyway, he's hosting a thing on that, which yeah. I'm really excited about. And, you know, we have some other programming coming up too. We've been doing like a mental health meetup with Yarrow Collective, and it's in Fort Collins as well, which has been really cool. Trying to think of some of the other programming that's happening. I mean, I love our Washingtons and Armory lineups. Like they always have some really cool things. And one of the things I think is really fun is Bluebird Music Festival, who typically have it. Yes. Yeah, yeah, in Boulder, yeah. they're going to be in Fort Collins this fall. So
right,
they'll have
right.
October weekend with us at Washington's and the Armory. And I'm super excited for that. I think it's going to be amazing.
Well, thank you so much for coming by. And I will make sure to let people know the schedule of some of the Thursday night.
Oh yeah.
Things this summer, and hopefully someday New West Fest will come back too.
That would be. I mean, you never know. But in yeah. the meantime, definitely check out Global Sounds too, yeah. and all the yeah. other fun things happening.
Yeah.
I'll give you another hour, then I gotta run. I gotta fly away. Leave you to fall, leave you to stuff your flowers.
That was Greta Cornett, music industry extraordinaire in Northern Colorado, especially Fort Collins, and me talking Foco MX, Fort Collins music, and of course, David Bowie, our favorite. Check out Thursday Night Bohemian Nights this summer in Fort Collins, right in the heart of Fort Collins, and also look out for submissions to Foco MX, which I'm sure is going to be soon, I guess, in a few months, as soon as submissions open. You know, make sure to get your stuff in there and be as proactive as possible with your photos and videos and links and everything. Thanks for listening to Mile High Stash as usual. And please do get in touch via milehighstash.com with questions, comments, donations, insults, therapy, whatever you want. Hope to hear from you. We'll talk next month.
So you wanna rise above duality, you wanna transcend day and night. Yes, I'm old fashioned, I just don't share your passion for ever changing eternal twilight. Go on and give oblivion a shot. Go on and fade to gray if you got to. Maybe you'll do better without God and make